harping on wars, big facts, and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and I'm falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and I'm falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. You can reach us through either of those means. And lots more news and views for our people. And I've got a very excellent commentary. Now, just about anybody who's black is going on and on about systemic racism. It's tough. It's really bad. This, of course, is a great explanation for cultural Marxists and the intellectually lazy. I'll tell you why. Cultural Marxism starts off with a premise, that is, all people are equal. Well, that's according to this this obviously false observation. Then, if all people are equal, why then the results should be equal. You know, I guess we should all, well, we won't quite be millionaires, but we should all have roughly the same amount of money, roughly the same achievement, and so on. You see, of course, that's the problem. If you have an erroneous premise, everything that follows from that will be erroneous. But anyway, the way the cultural Marxist reasoning goes is this. All men are equal, but you look around and they're not equal. You know, they're different levels of achievement, etc. Well, there's got to be reason for this. And even when you can't find direct discrimination, like, we will not let you succeed because you are black. We won't let you go to school. We won't hire you. We won't let you succeed in any way. Well, there's almost none of that. Okay, well, what's the explanation? Well, the explanation has got to be systemic racism. Even though we can't see it, somehow it's there. Now, on every level, this is nonsense. But just to take one very obvious observation. Orientals generally do quite well in Western society, right? I'm a former teacher, and I noticed that my Chinese and Korean and the odd Japanese students almost all did very well. Not everyone, of course, I mean, but I would ask myself why. Well, for one thing, most of them were relatively smart. That's a bit of an advantage, isn't it? And then secondly, they came from families that, even if the parents themselves did not speak much English, they were very clear about one thing. And one thing was they wanted their children to get an education. In other words, education was valued. And this goes back to the Confucian values of most Oriental societies of respect the scholar. In contrast to some black students, I didn't have many black students, but those who are in large supply in and around the GTA today, teachers notice that many come from broken families. In fact, 82% of blacks come from single parent families. That's been a problem. Well, why? Why do all people are equal? It shouldn't matter. But it does matter. Because often, in black culture, education is not prized. Now, that's not always true, of course. Even if it is somewhat prized, in a single-parent family, often the mother, it's usually the mother taking care of the young Negroes, she may not have the time or herself the background to strongly stress or support education. And so there's a double or triple whammy. Number one, this is highly politically incorrect, but blacks are less intelligent on the whole than whites or Orientals. It's a fact. The average North American black has an IQ of about 85. The average North American white about 100. Now, of course, there are exceptions. Some whites are extremely stupid, and some blacks are very bright. But that's a factor. A further factor, of course, is cultural values. If education is not prized, white, there isn't quite the pressure for Tishon to do well in school. Or, worse still, there is the tendency to alibi. If he doesn't do well in school, it must be, you got it, you guessed it, ahead of my even saying it, it must be racism. Anyway, all of this is about, gets back to black law, this privilege, or white privilege. We're told there's a lot of that. White privilege, racist, white supremacist. Nazi, these are all anti-white hate slurs to demonize whites and to justify white genocide. And somebody who needs to be called out and is called out very effectively by Denise McAllister is that pompous windbag, Oprah Winfrey.
A series of tweets like I normally would or write an article, I decided to post a video. It's in response to Oprah Winfrey's recent comments about white people and about white privilege, that we all are privileged, no matter whether we are begging on a street corner somewhere, or whether we're a billionaire like she is, whether we're president of the United States, or whether we're living in a homeless shelter somewhere. It doesn't matter. You have white privilege if you have white skin because of your whiteness. This is a racist statement. It makes her a racist. Whenever you make a blanket statement about someone because of their skin color alone, not, an observation about a group of people who might have the same color of skin, but their actual color of their skin determines their privilege or not privilege. This is racism by very definition. And she ignores the very fact that, yes, there are all kinds of disparities when it comes to white people and economic wealth and success. But like I've heard many times, whenever I make the same argument as a girl who grew up in poverty in Eastern North Carolina, living in a trailer. I didn't have very many opportunities, if any opportunities at all. The blacks that went to my high school and my school, my primary schools and secondary schools, all competed on the same level, the same kind of beginning and opportunities within the school system. So I really take issue to this idea that I have some kind of white privilege simply because of the color of my skin. But whenever I make that argument, the response is, well, if you were to take a black person in the exact same situation that you're in, you would still fare better because you're white. Of course, there's no proof in that. There's actually no way to measure that at all. Everyone is so individually different. I grew up in a very difficult home, a very difficult setting, a very difficult environment. The end of the Vietnam War, I lived in a military town. It was a difficult time to live. I didn't have a lot of opportunities. I didn't have money. And there are black people who are a whole lot more successful than I was. There were, in the area that I lived in. And they had opportunities that I didn't have because of affirmative action and other kinds of things that were going on in government policy. So we've been doing this and playing this game and doing this dance for a really long time about opportunity and equal opportunity, and yet we're still saying that there's all this white privilege. We're reducing everyone down to the color of their skin. And this is exactly what FOPR has done. It's wrong, it's dehumanizing, it does not take into account everyone's individual, diverse experiences, gifts, talents, heritage, all of it's different. And to say that there's just systematic racism because you want to say that there is, just because you state it, just because you look at disparity in numbers and you automatically assume that it's because of discrimination and not because of different choices, different situations that everyone lives in, all kinds of disparity within the individuals themselves when comparing us to each other, that we totally ignore this because that kind of narrative doesn't empower anyone. When we say that we're all equal, we all have opportunities in America, they may be different, but the only kind of opportunities that we're guaranteed by law is not to be discriminated against, and we have those laws in place. But we don't have any kind of guarantee that all of us will start out on the exact same starting line, that all of us will start out with the exact same abilities, the exact same kind of parents, the exact same kind of financial capabilities. None of this is possible in a free society. None of it is possible in any kind of reality. Yet, the reason why it's pushed is because it empowers people. If you can say that it needs to be happening, that you need to have this kind of equal opportunity going on, then you can take from others. You can blame others. You can use others and play on their guilt in order to empower yourself. And this is exactly what we see happening today. We see white people being dumped on because of their whiteness in order to beat them down, in order that for them to give up their goods, their earnings, their wealth, their success, their place, for those that they say that are said to be marginalized, disenfranchised. But the fact of the matter is that we have not disenfranchised anyone. No, not in this current day, not in 2020. Everyone has an opportunity, not the same opportunity, but you have a free opportunity according to what you've been dealt by God in this world. And that will end up with unequal outcomes, because that is the result of liberty. And we need to start as America, to start looking at life according to freedom and the messiness of it, the inequality of it, and accept that. Because that takes maturity. That takes the organizing for power groups out of the equation. I mean, that is what it truly means to live in America, is to live in inequality of outcomes, inequality of abilities, disparity all over the place, without discrimination being an obstacle. But we're still free. In whiteness, blackness, redness, yellowness, it doesn't matter. That is not what keeps us from being successful or being who we are or being able to be proud of who we are as individuals. And to take that away, to say, oh, you don't deserve your success or you're privileged or you're guilty no matter what simply because of the color of my skin is wrong and it's evil. And we need to call these people out. We need to call people out like Oprah, who thinks that she can sit up on her high horse made of $1 million and lecture all the rest of us of our whiteness and our privilege, but she hasn't a clue about how each one of us as individuals has lived. She is imposing a worldview and an assumption onto the rest of us because it empowers her narrative. It gives her moral authority in order to dictate and control other people. It's wrong, and we all need to stand up to it. We all need to say, it's enough.
And that was a very good commentary by Denise McAllister. She made some very, very good points there. I was quite surprised the other day, lo and behold, there was a report over the radio about a woman who'd been shot in downtown Toronto, just west of the downtown area, at the corner, roughly at the corner of Queen and Augusta Street. And as you might expect, there was a road, the roads were blocked during a police investigation. But, well, that wasn't what was so interesting. Well, what I found interesting was that they actually described the suspect. It was described as black, male, medium build, wearing a hoodie. I mean, wouldn't you know? And with no mask, interestingly, and in his mid-20s. Okay, I don't know if they caught him. I don't believe they did. But anyway, I found that interesting on the one hand. And because very often we're not given any description of whom they're looking for. A youth. That doesn't tell you a whole lot. Anyway, it's symptomatic of the color of crime in Toronto, or let me be more specific, the color of serious crime, or major crime, which is defined as murder, armed robbery, and rape. I'll tell you something didn't happen. I thought, well, maybe the Black Lives Matter will show up, and then they'll earnestly try to help the police find the suspect. Yeah, well, that didn't happen. And this is part of the hypocrisy, which must be called, just as Ms. McAllister called out the hypocrisy and the error of people like this pompous old Oprah Winfrey. Black Lives Matter is a fraud. They are Marxist anti-white people, or at least the leadership is. Marxist and anti-white. The name is a fraud. Black Lives Matter. Well, okay. Blacks in Toronto are, other than serious disease, I guess, later in life, like heart disease and cancer and so on, a major threat to the lives of young blacks, particularly young black males, is other young black males. In possession of illegal guns, shooting at them for any number of reasons, usually pretty minor. Well, where's Black Lives Matter? Saying Black Lives Matter, this guy is, we will assume, though we don't know this for sure, that the girlfriend was black. It was killed. I believe it was his girlfriend. Anyway, the woman who was killed. Now, this is where it is important to speak the truth. Or as they sometimes say, tell truth to power. But here is another one of these cases. Politically correct, over-the-top persecution. H&M suspends managers for internal racist slur. Hens and Moritz AB suspended several employees, that's H&M, employees, after a new hat for the Swedish retailer's chain was given an internal product name that contained a racist slur. What was it? Why are we always sheltered from knowing what it was? Well, because maybe you and I would either think it's not a slur at all, or pretty trivial. That's why the fake news media shelters this. Quote, we take the use of racially offensive language extremely seriously. Company spokeswoman Ulrika Isaacson said in a statement on Thursday, quote, while internal and external investigations are taking place, we have suspended the team and managers responsible for this area of the business. Immediate punishment. The incident comes 2 years after a controversy over a hoodie H&M advertised with a black child and a caption that read, coolest monkey in the jungle. That caused a lot of stir. I saw the ad, and I've got to say, I didn't think it was offensive. It was meant affectionately. They withdrew that quickly enough. Interesting testimony before a House of Commons committee on Thursday about China. And China, of course, is a mortal enemy of Canada's. It cheats on trade. It is holding two of our citizens as hostage because we have arrested Meng Wanzhou, who is the chief financial officer of and the daughter of the founder of Huawei, you know, the big tech giant. We arrested her on the request of the Americans who would like her extradited for fraud and various other charges. Anyway, this has been fought since December of 2018. Now, you might think, poor Meng, or M-E-N-G, but that seems to be pronounced Meng, poor Meng would be in jail, you know, in a cold cell with not the best food and all the rest of it. Well, no, because she's so rich. She actually owns two mansions in Vancouver, although she lives in China. And she is allowed through special dispensation of the courts to be free. She does wear an ankle bracelet, and apparently she has security to protect her and to make sure she doesn't jump on a plane and leave or something like that. Anyway, Meng is not exactly being badly treated. And she's got a top-flight team of lawyers pulling every technical trick in the book to try to prevent her from being extradited to the United States. Anyway, China has basically kidnapped two Canadians who were working in China and accuses them of some sort of breach of national security, espionage or something like that. They've been held in horrible conditions since very early 2019. Several other Canadians who've been convicted of drug charges in China have had their punishment upped from several years in jail to they're now on death row. China, of course, retaliated by breaking a number of trade agreements with us and refusing to accept delivery of some Canadian meats and canola and so on. And nationalists here in Canada have warned, since we abandoned Taiwan and established diplomatic relations with the Red Chinese back in 1970, they were warned that they are not our friends. But several generations of some elements of the Canadian business establishment have OD'd on the idea that there's great riches in them thar hills in China. And so the usual perhaps reticence or common sense that might otherwise have kicked in has not. It's now, though, painfully obvious that significant elements of the Liberal government, including Justin Trudeau's First Minister of Immigration, who then went on to become ambassador to Peking until he was turfed, because he was, I mean, it was obvious he was an echo for Red China. This is John McCallum. Significant elements of the Canadian political establishment are basically in the pockets of the Red Chinese, including the immensely powerful Desmarais people in Quebec. They own a power corporation, which is a huge corporation in Quebec, and they have had long-standing business interests in China, and they're huge contributors to the Liberal Party, including to former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, who has made numerous business trips since he left being prime, since he ceased being prime minister, numerous business trips to China. So the Liberal Party is, and the government particularly, is riddled with pro-China, pro-red Chinese people. Patriots have warned from the very beginning that close relations with China is bad news. Way, way, way back in 1997, there was a joint task force of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. And they generated a report called the Sidewinder Report, which I always thought was a good name, because the Sidewinder is a sneaky rattlesnake. And that was symbolically what they said Red China was. They said, this is 1997, 20, nearly a quarter of a century ago. And they warned of significant efforts by the Red Chinese to infiltrate Canadian politics and Canadian business, to buy up strategic Canadian businesses, to steal technology, both through business and through students. And the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, back in May, warned Canadian universities to be careful of the hordes of students that are coming from Red China, but they may well, in many cases, be more than just be spectacled, eager student trying to learn what we have to offer in chemistry or math or whatever the case might be, but that they can be pressed into service as spies. Because much of what any country wants isn't the stuff of James Bond movies of one particular villain that who has to be confronted and brought down by an intrepid spy, but information, technology. If Red China can steal technology, It saves them not only time, it saves them immense costs of research and development. We know that happened with Nortel. Nortel was a tech giant, a telecommunications giant, 20 years ago. It was in every widow and orphan's and stock portfolio and pension plan. It was a rock solid, paid a good dividend, and seemed to go on forever. It is now a thing of the past. It collapsed, and it collapsed in very large measure to the fact that Huawei, which was then only a small tech company in China, had stolen key pieces of their technology. And they'd done it by simply placing employees in their ranks. And these employees have gone back to China with all sorts of pilfered technology, and now have honored places. They're senior employees at Huawei. You see, this is where anti-racism makes people blind. A sensible approach would be to say, well, certainly anybody who has come recently from China, who is a student, or maybe wants to be an employee in a sensitive technical area, should be at least considered a possible spy. Oh, no, that's racist. You can't say, well, yeah, you can. The Chinese have a concept called guangzi, which is obligation. And you have complicated obligations. But one of the obligations that the Red Chinese government impresses upon all its citizens is that you have an obligation to China, to the state. So you may be studying over in North America, but if somebody from the embassy or elsewhere decides that you might be in a position to get this blueprint or this piece of information, they will press you to do that. Now, I'm sure there are people who resist the pressure, but the pressure is often backed up by promises of favors or retaliation against your relatives back in China. That makes, I would say, any recent newcomer from China subject to suspicion. Now, I'd certainly be the last person to say, oh, they're all spies. No, they're not all spies. But some of them are. And we have to take this seriously. That's the problem with assuming that all people are equal or all the same. They're not. Anyway, this is by way of in kind of background to testimony that occurred on Thursday before the a House of Commons committee. And one of the witnesses was a former Canadian ambassador who has spoken out quite a bit. His name is David Mulroney. And he said, sorry, a little bit farther up in this. Canada's former ambassador to China, David Mulroney, told the parliamentary committee on Thursday that it's time for a change in Canada's approach to Red China, a change he doesn't believe the Liberal government is yet willing to make. I think he's right. Quote, it's not clear that the government has completely given up the fiction that China is our friend. This long overdue course correction must be shared with Canadians, who would be enormously reassured. Canada, the Red China, is not Canada's friend. And not just in the sense that nations have interests but not necessarily friendships. Red China is an aggressive, expansionist country that is seeking hegemony, or which wants to be the hegemon in Asia, and sees us as in some ways a hostile force because of our alliance with the Americans, but also as something to be exploited. He went on to say, it worries me when I see people who are thought leaders seem to lack the sense of energy to defend our national interests. He said he believes prominent people, former politicians like former Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, and government officials doing business with China should have to be upfront about any business ties. If you choose to go to work for China or another country, you can do that, but you have to be transparent. Mulroney argued for Canada to stand with allies to pressure China together. He said China can punish one country economically, but can't do that to a coalition of countries standing together. And he added something that I think is often forgotten by those who have an inferiority complex about Canada. The reality is that Canada has what China needs. China needs the products that Canada, Australia, and the United States produce. And we should be no nonsense about that. don't screw with us. And there must be punishment for Chinese espionage. In an intriguing little sidebar to this, Mulroney was supposed to appear alongside former ambassadors John McCallum, he's the one who's married to a China woman and is very, very pro-China, and Robert White. But these two declined the invitations to appear. The committee voted to formally summon them to testify. I think that, you know, the arrogance of these, certainly of McCallum. Well, he doesn't want to be questioned. I'm not surprised. Well, here is a you might know, wouldn't you? The old censorship lobby is once again rattling its swords, this is of course the B'nai B'rith, the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, and believe me, it has nothing to do with human rights, unless you don't believe free speech is a human right. Well, what's the big noise now? A Polish-Canadian newspaper linked to a community group that's received almost $300,000 in government funding, twice published an anti-Semitic tirade. A tirade. Now, notice the way the writers basically editorialize. In this case, it's Tom Blackwell of the National Post. So they twice published supposedly anti-Semitic commentary that suggested that the recent COVID-19 is a creation of organized Jewry, and the Jews were behind were the cause of all the world's ills. B'nai B'rith said it has called on police to investigate the newspaper story as a hate crime, alleging it is blatant violation of the law. Quote, to publish something like this in a Canadian newspaper, whether it's in English or whether in English or non-English, is criminal, said Michael Boston, CEO of what's described as the Human Rights Group. No, it's not. It's a Jewish lobby for Jewish interests, not human rights group. Mostyn, of course, has already found them guilty without even a charge or a trial. We feel very strongly that this is a case where charges should be laid, says Mostyn. And the publication was called Gloss Polski. It was headlined Coronavirus or Fake Pandemic, and it was published twice, once in March and once later in April. We're not told an awful lot about what it said. It did say that the COVID-19 might be a biological weapon being worked on in the United States and Israel. Not just by experts, but by under Jewish leadership of quote Jewish psychopaths. I don't know that that's true. I know that story was about, not necessarily even with the Jewish connection, but there were people who believed that COVID-19 was invented in an American lab. And Red Chinese put out that story too. I think the best information is that it, of course, it came from China and it leaped. It was a virus that was endemic to bats and leaped from them into the human kingdom through filthy, wet food markets. It also suggested that radical Islamic group ISIL was a Jewish creation, and there's considerable reason to believe that. And it said that Israel is the cause of all the world's woes. Now, this is a half a sentence. Now, I don't know if that is a fair description. if it is a fair description, then it's obviously false. There are other bad guys in the world today. It said Vladimir Lenin, Nazi, a National Socialist, Information Minister Josef Goebbels, and Turkish strongman Recep Tayyip Erdogan are all covert Jews. Certainly Lenin was of Jewish origin. I think the assertion about Dr. Goebbels was false, and I've never seen any evidence of that would be the case of the Turkish leader. So I'm not suggesting that what was in the article, or at least all of what was in the article, was right. Some of it was obviously wrong. Quote, the spreading, the ongoing global pandemic has spurred a fast-spreading epidemic of hate speech and disinformation, including conspiracy theories with a clear anti-Semitic motive, said the UN organization UNESCO in June. that's a pretty broad statement. Conspiracy theories. Maybe some of those theories are correct. Mostyn, he's the big noise for B'nai B'rith, said that it's one thing for such hatred to be spread throughout the social media, but worse to see it printed repeatedly in a Canadian newspaper. Now, I don't think we have a very clear idea of what was said. I've quoted what the paper chose to share with us. I would say that certainly some of what is there, I don't think is accurate. However, and this is a kind of an important however, why must writing be censored? Far better for the Jewish group to write a letter to the editor. Or say that, if the letter's not printed, that they will go public and they will refute this. Isn't that the better way to say, okay, you said these things. We think this and this and this are wrong or lies or not true for these and those reasons. This is the truth. That's what a healthy society does. Rather than they should be charged. And, of course, if convicted, could go to jail. That's censorship instead of debate. And we are quickly becoming a very, very repressive society. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to play a couple of cuts from Ray Stevens. Ray Stevens has been around a long time. He's a great entertainer, a great comedian who mixes music and talk, and he's got just a zany sense of humor. So this is Ray Stevens.
Each time I let you hurt me, I swear that it's the last. I long to be your lover. You just want me for the last. There are those who think I'm charming. Yeah, they think I'm Mr. Cool. But with you, I'm just a clown, a joker, and a fool. But you don't deserve my anger. No, you're not the one to blame. I'm the silly moth. Keeps on flirting with your flame. All you do is curl your finger. I come running to your side, ignoring all the tears of pain, swallowing my pride. Baby, your bozo's back again. Big red nose on me. And the back again. Just like a bozo painted on a kiddie's punching bag. You knock me down and I bounce right back, pretending it's a gag. I might as well wear grease paint the way I play my part. But like Pagliacci, I'm playing with a reading line broken heart. And baby, your bozo's back again. A big red nose on me. Hand me down my baggy pants with the polka dots and nails. Crank up that old Calliope. I know I swore I wouldn't come back. Ah, but there's no use. So why pretend? Yes, I was born to be your clown. Baby, your bozo's back again.
Another fine mess you got us into. Another fine mess, oh well.
He was born in the little farming town of Winterset, on the new frontier, a Midwest native son. But his star would shine as bright as any star can ever get, and he would cast a giant shadow before he was done. Tall in the saddle, he went to reap the wild wind in old California and across the Rio Grande. From the stagecoach on the big trail to Rio Bravo and back again, he rode on wings of eagles, this quiet man. Here's to you, Marion Michael Morrison. Here's to you, for all our battles that you fought and won. A true American hero, a straight shooting son of a gun. Here's to you, Marion Michael Morrison. Singing Sandy, Sergeant Stripe, McClintock and McHugh, Katie's elder son and Big Jim McLean, Brannick and Rooster, Hondo and Big Jake. Yeah, we knew him by 100 different names. On the sands of Iwo Jima, back to the tank, the Flying Tigers and the Green Berets. He was with fighting sea bees and every American fighting man at the Alamo and on that longest day. Here's to you, Marion Michael Morrison. There might be a few who would dare to say the star you hung might fade away, but I can hear you tell them, Pilgrim, that'll be the day. Here's to you, Marion Michael Morrison. Here's to you, all our rushing between meetings, I jumped into my Cadillac. Something caught my eye, a frantic motion front to back. Butterfly was beating its pretty wings against the glass. Each time I reached for it, it flew just beyond my grasp. From the front seat to the back seat, it kept avoiding me. Till I said out loud, be still, my friend, so I can set you free. I'll hold you for just a moment and release you for all time. And then a question burned down deep inside my mind. Am I a butterfly inside a hoopty bee?
That was Ray Stevens. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on AltRightTV.com or White Resistance Radio. I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, entwined, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair domain.